Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
And that's it. It's Saturday night. We're here again. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, brought to you by Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It's the State Sovereignty Show, and as always, I'm Dave. We're going to have a very special guest tonight, Vicky. Co-founder of March Against Monsanto, the local chapter here in Springfield, Missouri, is going to join us. I had a great time today. I went out and joined the on International March Against Monsanto Day, joined in with the crowd. We had quite a nice outing. It was raining a little bit when we started. The sun was out and blistering when we finished. It was fun. And we want to get some Monsanto info out to you folks. We want to let everyone know what MAM is all about, how it works, and Vicky's here to do that. For you folks that tuned in for the Million Dollar Message goes on. We're going to get right back to that after our chat with Vicky. I'm enjoying the Million Dollar Message. We had been scheduled for last weekend, and this weekend I came down a little ill yesterday, and by radio, shortly before radio time last night, had zero voice. So we weren't even on the air last night. We sent our apologies along the way, but we're back in the saddle now. We're here again, and we will be carrying the Million Dollar Message right through to the primary campaign. We will have, week after next, we're going to have an extended chat with Mike. He's going to come along, and we're going to talk. We'll talk a little bit about the last legislative session, what went good, what went bad. We'll talk a little bit about Mike's race and how that's going. And we'll talk a little bit, of course, with Mike about who Mike is and what Mike's all about. Mike Moon, one of the great, great leaders in Missouri legislative politics. For now, if you Million Dollar Message folks are on, go ahead and feel free to call in. The call takers are ready to talk to you, and we'll get back with that Million Dollar Message as soon as we take care of this quick thing that I wanted to do tonight with Vicky Kepling. Vicky, how you doing? Vicky, are you there? Vicky, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Vicky.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for coming today, and thank you also for having me on the show tonight.
Oh, it was great, and so it was a great day. There was considering the weather, I thought it an exceptional crowd. But by any measure, in Springfield, for any event like this, it was a good crowd. Considering the fact that when we started, it was pouring rain, I thought the crowd exceptional. It's quite an energetic group, and we had a good time marching down Sunset to Fremont from Metter Park, down Fremont to Battlefield. and then up Battlefield to the intersection of Battlefield and Glenstone, where we stood and visited with folks for about an hour and 15 minutes. What exactly is Monsanto and the march against Monsanto, Vicki?
Well, it's got several layers to it, really. March Against Monsanto, it deals with genetically modified organisms. That's one of the key topics. And then Monsanto also as a whole and with its history of, you know, making chemicals. And it's also dealing, though, that these chemical companies are controlling our food supply now. The reason I march is because 78% of the foods in our supermarkets now contain genetically modified organisms, and most Americans don't even realize it. 91% of Americans want labels, but they're not labeled here. 64 countries require labels. 31 countries have banned them completely. But here in the United States, our food manufacturers, even like Kraft, they label for other countries, so they're already labeling, but they're not required to do it here in the United States. And they also change their products to where some of their products don't have GMOs for certain other countries. And the reason for that, of course, is not, you know, 91% of Americans want it. Well, why aren't they labeled? And that's because they're controlling our legislators.
Why wouldn't they want food labels that it contains genetically modified organisms?
Well, that's kind of what we think, and I don't know if that's my phone or yours. I apologize. If they're proud of their product and if they believe that their product is safe, then why don't they want to label? That's kind of our thoughts on it. I have spoken to local legislators, and what they say is that by putting a label on these products, it would be sending a message that there is something wrong with the labels. And, of course, our argument to that is we know what's in our mattresses. We think that we deserve to know what's in our food.
Okay. I want to say something to the listeners here. I am not prepared at this point in time to back off of my libertarian stance. And I'm not doing that, listeners. I agree that the federal government is way too big. I believe that the federal government needs to get out of our business. I believe that the federal government, I personally believe that we'd ought to do away with the FDA, the Department of Education, the EPA, all of the things that the federal government is stealing money from you to fund and finance and all things that are way outside the bounds of what America ever meant for the federal government to be involved in. However, that said, we currently live in a society that demands that we label food because it contains peanuts, that they label CDs because they contain certain lyrics. And it is absolutely amazing to me that in this day and time where the federal government demands all of these labels on food, that they write specific exemptions for Monsanto so that they do not have to label the fact that they have genetically modified your food. Now, Vicki, what is a genetically modified organism?
It cannot happen in nature. It's actually when they take DNA from an organism or an animal and they inject it into the cells of seeds or another organism to make it one of two things, either herbicide resistant, which would be, you know, to where it could withstand Roundup, or pesticide producing, where it turns every single cell of the plant into a pesticide that kills any bug that bites into it. 85% of our corn is now BT corn, which is pesticide producing, to where any, you know, insect, a bee, whatever, if it bites into it, it will kill the insect, but it's supposed to be safe for us. And that's what, you know, we think that we deserve to know. I would like to, parents need to know what they're feeding their kids. I would like to know what I'm buying. And we just don't have that. We don't have that technology.
Okay. And am I wrong? It's further true that entities like Monsanto and even the federal government assure us that this stuff is safe for human consumption. But the fact of the matter is that those studies just aren't done yet, are they?
Well, it's my understanding the ones that are doing it mostly here in the United States is actually Monsanto. And, I'm sure your listeners know a lot about it, but it was founded in 1901 here in St. Louis, Missouri. It's still located close to there, but it's got a long history of polluting the world with some of the most toxic compounds known to mankind. It's had plastics and PBCs in World War II. They helped to develop the atom bomb. Vietnam, they manufactured Agent Orange, and, you know, there's people that are still hurting from that. They had dioxin, and, I mean, people remember Times Beach. That may not just have been Monsanto, but the same companies that have created all these chemicals are now producing our seeds. And, you know, and people just got to kind of raise an eyebrow about that. That's just, you know, you've got to wonder, do you trust Monsanto?
Okay, now in a I'm amused that the federal government has gone so far as to issue laws that say that suggests that if Monsanto's crop is liable for damage on your property, that they are exempt from lawsuits. Is that correct?
I'm not sure about that, but I do know that their seeds are patented, and that's the reason they make these seeds and change these seeds, because you cannot patent natural life. And so once they engineer these seeds and they can patent them, they can make them to where other farmers cannot save seeds to use in future years, so they have to rebuy them. And, I mean, if they're using the herbicide-resistant seeds, then, of course, they're also selling their other products like Roundup to go along with it.
Okay. It is a fact, listeners, that the Monsanto Protection Act, issued, sponsored by our own Roy Blunt here in Missouri, does exempt Monsanto from any liability for their product or damages caused by their product. Further, it is a fact that, and here's the funny part, if you are growing a crop a crop of, say, corn, and you would like your corn to be organic, or you would like your corn to be GMO-free, and some wind comes or some bees or butterflies come and pollinate your crop, and you're next door to a GMO corn crop, that you can be and will be legislatively barred from saving your own seeds, the seeds from your own product, because Monsanto has rigged the court system that once your crop is genetically modified by pollination, then that patent for your corn belongs to them. So what is the march against Monsanto internationally, Vicki?
Oh, and just to touch on what you just said, I realize what you're talking about. You're talking about Section 735 of H.R. 933.
Mm-hmm.
It was a one-year bill. I do believe that it has since expired, but and the scary thing about that one was, and I'll get back to your question in just a second, was it would allow, if it went to the courts, if somebody planted seeds that were genetically modified, and then it was found that these seeds contained some kind of harmful effect or on humans, that those same seeds and plants would be able to go ahead and be harvested, the food would be harvested and sold and consumed. I mean, it just so overstepped. I mean, I called Blunt's office about that, and what they said is it was dealing with sugar beets from the past, and you may know more about that than me. I don't know. But the March Against Monsanto internationally, again, this was the second annual event. There was 366 cities that participated today, and that was on six different continents. So this was truly a worldwide event. And that's why, even though it was raining in the beginning, you don't want to stop, you know, and, like, reschedule, because it is, you know, it's a big thing. It's not just Springfield. It's all over.
Okay, and this is the second year, isn't it, of the local chapter participating in the international organization? And I'm assuming that there are already plans afoot for next year's.
Oh, of course. This is something that's going to grow because we're winning. That's the thing. There's more and more demand for organic feed, for organic foods, for non-GMO corn. And as more people become aware of, you know, the facts of these GMOs, there's going to be a higher demand. So it is a process. It's not something that's just going to change overnight. I wish it would. But it is a process. And I'm just very happy to be involved in something that is making such big changes through the whole world. But something I do want to bring up, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, have you been talking about that any?
We've dealt with it a very little bit. The show that we host here is pretty much about state sovereignty. Now we have a host who has a show on Wednesday night who's dealing quite a bit with that.
It's what it is, for people that haven't heard about it. It's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and it is this huge trade agreement. If people can think back to the days of NAFTA, this TPP would affect 40% of the world. And it would give, and to bring it back to Monsanto, what it does is it really gives more power to the corporations to like, they can sue countries that don't want to go along with their policies and different things like that. So they're pushing other governments. But I'm just hoping that your listeners will, you know, kind of peek their ears to the TPP, because this is something that's going through right now. It is not going to vote yet, but it's something that people need to be aware of.
Okay. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, folks. If you want to Google that, if you want to Google GMO, if you want to Google Monsanto, and if you'd like to get a hold of your local chapter of March Against Monsanto, in Springfield, there is a Facebook group, a social networking group. They actually have meetings. Plan things out. How do people get a hold of you folks, Vicki?
Well, anyone can go to March Against Monsanto for the national group, but for our local group, just go to March Against Monsanto Springfield, Missouri. We have, I don't know, about 300 members on there, but I'm just always amazed at these annual marches. And you were there today. You go there, and you know, there was a lot of new timers there that had never marched before today. And this is something that brings everybody out, because everybody eats, And, you know, everybody wants to know what has GMOs in it, but we don't know. But anyway, these people get together, and, you know, if you're like me, you like to talk to people, so I get to meet people and hear their stories and you know, what Monsanto means to them and what GMOs mean to them. And it's just, to me, it's fun. I mean, it's a way of raising awareness in the community and getting to know people at the same time. So I love it.
Good. All right. Thanks for being with us, Vicki. Anything, any other plugs you want to get in before we leave?
No, but I think you did bring up a really good point about how these corporations are affecting or influencing our legislators. And so, you know, I think people just need to really make a note of that. Since Monsanto's world headquarters is right here in Missouri, our legislators get more money than anywhere else in, you know, the nation. And
absolutely.
So they really do have, you know, they have a lot of influence. And we really need to look at that. I mean, the top, I mean, the people that received contributions in 2012, the top receiver was Claire McCaskill, second was Obama, and third was Blunt. And anyway, and so they really need to protect the people and not the corporations.
Absolutely. And it's not just Blunt and McCaskill and Roy Long and the evil people up in Washington, D.C. If you go to Missouri Ethics Commission's website and look up your legislator in Jefferson City, that is the person who represents you at the state capitol, you will find Monsanto money in that kitty. They pay money for virtually every legislator on both sides of the aisle, as they do Blunt and McCaskill, for example.
Sure.
So it really is about them buying the government. Further, there's a nice little, and I always get a kick out of this, there's a great little graphic going around that just clearly illustrates, Vicki, the and I know you've seen it, clearly illustrates the revolving door that goes on between the board and the chief executives at Monsanto and the administration in Washington, D.C.
Yes, I know exactly.
Clearly, I'm talking people who spend 4 years at Monsanto and 4 years in the administration, either in the Department of Agriculture or the Department of Food and Drug Administration or even Department of State. And these are folks that just go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth between Monsanto and the federal government. And we're not just once again, just to make sure that we're not politically slanting Monsanto, this was not just the Obama administration. This went through the Bush administration and has gone back for three or four administrations.
Oh, sure. And Michael Taylor's right there at the top of the list.
Exactly.
And what are we going to do? I mean, when we've got things like Citizens United that gives these corporations personhood rights, and we have deemed that money equals free speech, I don't know how we're going to stop it, but we have to stop it.
Well, that's what we're here for, Vicki. And we're not going to stop it. We are not going to stop it until individuals wake up and become aware of what's going on and become aware of how to fix it. And we happen to, Monsanto is a good starting point for us because they're Missouri-based and we're in Missouri. We are not going to beat this monster down until we take control of our state governments, until we take control of our local governments, and then and only then are we ever going to be powerful enough as a people to stand up to the federal government state by state by state and say, back in your box, get back in the box that was designed for you, federal government, and get out of our lives.
You know, but the problem that I see with that is I just went to Jeff City, I don't know, it was about a month ago, and, you know, and I got to see just how partisan it really is there. And so the people that we would want or we would think would be able to make positive changes are not going to because Monsanto's in their back pocket. So I don't know how that's, I mean, and again, I'm just giving my opinion. I don't know how that would work.
Well, it can only work when we stop and we're getting back to and we're getting back to what the crux of what we're doing here is all about. I've said this 100 times to you listeners out there, and I'm going to say it again because this is a perfect example of the point I've been making to you folks for 2 years now. There is a, you know, our time, whether we're Republican or Democrat, if we believe in a government for the people, of the people, and by the people, our time is now. Our season is the primary season. It is not the general election season. The time for you to select your representative is now. To get you don't unseat incumbents just by wishing them away. You unseat incumbents by getting to work, and the state is the place to start, and the state House of Representatives is the perfect starting point for you, because you are talking about a representative body that where each individual comes from a 100 square block area. You're talking about, you are not politically active, brothers and sisters, if you don't know your House of Representative member from Jefferson City well enough that you could meet in a grocery store. I mean, the area that they represent is that small. And two or three of us on three Saturday afternoons, we can sway a House of Representatives election. A Missouri State House of Representatives election can be had by three or four activists working a couple of Saturday afternoons in a 100 square block area. Fielding a candidate who cares enough about you that they recognize you when they see you at church or at the grocery store or in the barber shop or in the beauty shop. That's the kind of representation you need in Jefferson City. That's the kind of representation you can manage. And when you manage your representative, you are truly being represented. That's why I've been telling you folks that you begin taking back your government at that level. Now, you hear from everybody, we can't do it all. We only own half of one branch of one third of the government. That's true. But when we take back just the House of Representatives, brothers and sisters, we've got a handle on it. We've got a good start, because one house of one third of the government can't make a good law alone, but they can stop single-handedly a bad law. Every law has to go through both houses before it goes to the governor. So when your House of Representatives, it's the easiest to win, it's the easiest to control, it's the smallest, most representative body of government we have, your state House of Representatives. And I didn't mean to get off on a tirade in your time there, Vicki, but you gave me
a perfect
soapbox to jump onto to our point here.
Well, and what I saw though in Jeff City is it's still very two-party system.
Oh yeah.
And I see that as a problem. I'm an issues person. When you see me out there, it's not because I'm out there for a certain party. It's because I believe in the issue, just like with Monsanto and GMOs. I'm not there because I'm on either side. And so it's disappointing to me that it is such a two-party system where people vote just because they're on a certain party. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And that's, you know, and I agree with you. I agree with you. You're preaching the same message we've been preaching here on this particular show for 2 years. I have dear friends who are Republicans. I have dear friends who are Democrats. Almost to a person, they're exasperated with their own party. They're exasperated with their own government. And I think we are getting a handle finally as a people on getting away from voting for someone just because they have a D or just because I don't even know who's running. I'm just going to go in and vote for the Democrat. You know, I think we're getting a lot away from that. I think people are becoming more issues interested. There is always going to be a strong divergence on how we stand on the big issues. You know, I mean, we can throw out the words about abortion and gay marriages and the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan and overtaxation and undertaxation and how taxes should be used and how taxes shouldn't be used and how much tax should be collected and how we can collect it. All of those things, we're all going to have a strong divergence of opinion on those things. And I will continue to contend that in all of those issues, those decisions should be made in my state house, not in my White House. They should be made in my state capital, not my national capital. Because the
But
people,
how would that work with war? You had mentioned the war in Iraq.
Okay.
I don't see how that would be
It's not. No, that's not a state issue. Constitutionally, that is a federal issue. Constitutionally, Monsanto is not a federal government issue.
True. The problem is, though, is these legislators, even at the state level, are getting all this money from corporations like Monsanto.
Right.
My state representative is Lincoln Huff. And we had a situation here in town dealing with the coal ash landfill, and city utilities. So, I mean, where does it end? How do we get the money away from the legislative process?
Well, I mean, I encourage everyone to go to mec.mo.gov. It's the Missouri Ethics Commission. We're not going to get money away from the legislative process, and I don't ever want the federal government dictating how Monsanto can and can't spend their money. The best thing we can do is we can all be aware of because the records are public, of who is giving to our candidate and who is not, and what they stand for. Now, I have a candidate. I have a representative, Eric Burleson. He got $100 from Monsanto, as did almost every legislator sitting in Jefferson City. But he has not voted for pro-Monsanto things. He is opposed to Monsanto. He comes out and stands against Monsanto. So I'm not on board with you that just because Monsanto dropped $100 in someone's account, that person is bought and paid for. I am suggesting, though, that the best thing we can do as voters, as people who want to say we're the people and we're taking over, we're taking our government back, one of the basics of our education needs to be to know how to find out who gave to who, and then ask the tough questions. Ask your representative, hey, I see that you got $500 from ABCDE. I want to ask you how you feel about XYZ. Hold people up. Hold people accountable. Monsanto isn't going to quit donating to some candidate just because that candidate didn't, you know, Monsanto's donated again to almost every incumbent candidate. I haven't found one that they haven't donated to yet.
It just makes it hard. It's my understanding that a person needs about $100,000, I believe, just to get into a state representative position. And so what do you got to do? You got to start raising money from everybody you can get it from. And by the time you get in, you end up owing people. And so to me, that's kind of a problem. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying, too, about not wanting to infringe on the rights of, you know, people to spend their money. But at the same time, I just feel like it has a negative impact, especially with Monsanto and GMOs and the Monsanto Protection Act. Anyway, we see it. We see the negative impacts. And me being a citizen, I don't know what to do. But I do like your idea of starting locally, you know, and doing what we can at the state level. It's just, it's overwhelming. There's so much to keep up with. There's so much bad going on. And so, you know, Jen, bringing it back to today with the march, I mean, that's why I really enjoy getting out there. You get around like-minded people that are there for the same cause. They're there because they want what's best for their family. And,
exactly.
You know, that's what I stand for.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Well, that's March Against Monsanto. Be sure, folks, and out there in Missouri, and those of you listening even from other states, to get on Google or talk to folks and find out where your local chapter of this is. This is a huge international thing. It's a David versus Goliath thing going on out here. And if you want to be on the stone-throwing side, if you want to be on the side of good versus evil, Google up your local chapter. Find out how to get involved. There will be a march about this time next year, so you've got plenty of time to think about it, to find out what's going on. If you're in the Springfield area, it's March Against Monsanto-Springfield-Mo. Get involved with that. We'll see you out there next year. Thanks, Vicki. I appreciate you coming along and explaining to the audience how things were going. This audience probably knows about Monsanto and knows about genetically modified food. I just wanted to kind of get the word out to them because they tend to stay involved more in candidate issues than in issue, you know, in candidate and candidacies than in specific issues. And when they are involved in specific issues, they tend to get a little tunnel visioned. So I wanted to let folks know that this was going on out there and that there is someone out there fighting this issue, and let them know how to get involved in that if they want to. I thank you for your time, and you'll drop in again with us here sometime soon and let us know how things are going over there. And next year, we'll start about a month or so before, and we'll start pushing this event and other events around the state that have to do with this March Against Monsanto thing. And we'll do our part to try to be a little more active in the issue.
Well, and we sure thank you. We thank you for helping to get the word out and also the awareness that we're spreading. I mean, a lot of people have heard about GMOs, but they really didn't know what they were. So thank you for everything you're doing to help.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. All righty. So bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to get on with the million-dollar message. Lucy stands by to take your call here at 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. We'd love to hear from you.
To cold climb, come springtime, so let me hear you say, they rise to me and blow back.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Okay, we had a little extra long break there. I snuck an extra sound bite in because I had to go and get another glass of iced tea to soothe my aching throat. But I'm back, and we're here again. The Million Dollar Message. We need to hear from you. 347-677-1835. What's the issue? The issue is this. We have a serious problem in this country. The federal government has grown to epic proportions. We are no longer a representative republic. It is that simple. We are no longer in any phase of the democratic republic. That is long gone. We are a elitist oligarchy. That is we are being ruled by a ruling class of elites. In Washington, D.C., at every level, in every facet of our lives, if you will flash back with me to Philadelphia, the Articles of Confederation had failed. That is the loose confederation of states. 13 states had loosely bound themselves together as a quasi-entity. Each state with its own independence. Each state was for all intents and purposes, an independent nation. We looked geographically and sociologically like Europe, where each country is its own sovereignty, and they're all geographically located in proximity to one another, and that's exactly what we were. And so the states, for their own protection and for their own general welfare, kind of banded together into a confederation. Well, because each state was so proud of its own sovereignty, was so proud of its own rules, as it should be, was so proud of its nearly homogeneous population of people who had nearly homogeneous societal and ethical and ethnic origins, structures. They each had their own way of life and of doing things, some to extreme, where you get to the extreme north And you had the what today would be the Christian right. You had folks who were very religious, very oriented toward a morality and an ethic that was deep rooted in Christianity. And you get all the way to the South, where you had the slave owners and the large landowners, and each one of these different states, as you can see from that extreme example, had to some degree or another their own culture, and they all protected that culture and their own sovereignty, and so the Confederation. Of the states didn't have the power at all to force any one state to do anything. In fact, every decision at what we would think of today as the national level had to be unanimous. All 13 states had to agree or nothing could be done. And that wasn't working. What had happened is we'd fought a Revolutionary War and we couldn't even pay our debt because they couldn't force one state to fess up their share of the money. We couldn't even form a standing army because they couldn't force any given state to fess up their share of the manpower for that, or the money for that matter. We were losing face with the rest of the world as a newly formed independent Confederation, because we were reneging on our debt, because we had each state in total sovereignty making separate treaties with separate foreign countries and with separate Native American tribes. We had a loosely joined cooperative that was about to tear itself apart. We had states even on the verge, literally, of war with one another. In a last-ditch attempt to fix this, some folks got together in Philadelphia and with the intention of fixing the Articles of Confederation, they quickly realized that those articles were irreparable. And they came away with the Constitution. Now, all of that stuff that I just said, all of that lecture that we just had, was only to set this up, to let you know that as these folks met in Philadelphia, each of them came to that convention knowing that, A, something had to be done. Something had to be done to strengthen the cooperative, to make the cooperative stronger than the Confederation, than the Articles of Confederation, the cooperative of the states as it existed at the time. Yet, every one of them came jealously guarding, and this is important, the sovereignty of their own state. None of them wanted to give away the sovereignty of their state. They all wanted their own state, that point of governance closest to them and most controlled by them, to be the dominant factor in all government. Now listen, they wanted their own state to be the level of government that made the decisions that affected their day-to-day lives. That's brutally important. And so they came away with a well-crafted and beautiful document in the history of humankind. It wasn't perfect. Nobody ever claimed it was perfect. They knew coming out of Philadelphia it wasn't perfect. Much, much consternation went into the slave policies. The founders understood that, and in fact, Thomas Jefferson stated more than once, we're going to have a war over this slavery issue. But they came away with a tightly knit federal government that kept the sovereignty of the states. And that's what was important to them. Now, you had another group of people, and I say this to my Convention of the States friends all the time, and you listeners all understand that I am in favor of the Convention of the States. I am in favor of amending the Constitution to put the federal government back in its box. But I say this all the time. The real fight when they left Philadelphia was just beginning. The real fight, the real debate, was the ratification process. That is now taking this document and selling it to the 13 states. The same thing is going to happen if we have a convention. The real fight is going to be in the ratification process. The real debate is going to be when we try to sell this thing to everyone else. But that was a preface to say that out of this came a group of people who favored adopting the new Constitution and a group of people who didn't favor adopting the new Constitution. In the group of people who favored adopting it, you had people like Madison and Jefferson and Hamilton and John Jay. Three of those four that I just named set out on a crusade called the Federalist Papers, where they wrote, and if you haven't read the Federalist Papers, you've absolutely got to. It is phenomenal reading. It addresses every argument you could have against the Constitution of the United States. And it's good reading. It's hard reading because it's written by guys who wrote and talked in the old English style. But it's worth the read. And you had this group of people called the Anti-Federalists. And they were kind of spearheaded by one of the people who gave us Article 5 to the Constitution, George Mason, and another guy that you've heard of, Patrick Henry. They were opposed to the Constitution, and they wrote a series of papers called the Anti-Federalist Papers. You need to read them, too. Here's what they had to say about the Constitution in a nutshell. We're making a horrible mistake. Sooner or later, this federal government that you're creating is going to devour us. They weren't against the states being together as a unified body. What they've said is, sooner or later, this monster you've created is going to eat us alive. And brothers and sisters, they were right. I'm glad the Constitutionalists won. I'm glad the Federalists won. I love the Constitution. I like the way our nation was intended to be. But the Anti-Federalists were right. I don't like the way it has become. And you shouldn't either. All of this now to get to the point. The point is this. There's only one way to take the government back. You're not going to do that by sending the right people to Washington, D.C. That bucket of worms is too full of crap, quite frankly. They control us. We no longer control them. They are bought and paid for, and they enjoy their power, and they do everything possible to further their power. The only way you're ever going to get back to a democratic republic is to fire in yourself this jealousy for your state that your founding fathers took to Philadelphia, to stoke the fire within yourself for getting government back to the local level. See, the problem with federal supremacy is that here in Missouri, where we don't want our high school kids to be issued condoms every time they ask for one, we have states like New York and California who are running the show through Washington, D.C. for you. Whereas here in Missouri, and let them have them in California and New York. We don't care, you know? Here in Missouri, it ain't for us. You need your government. That is the government that makes the decisions that affect your everyday life. Not the government that, like Vicky said, decides we are or aren't going to go to war as a nation. Not the government that decides that the people in all 50 states need to use the same dollar bills. Not the government that decides that Missouri can't charge Illinois for using the Mississippi River. That's what the federal government was created for. The federal government was not created to tell you that you can't sell raw milk to your neighbor in Missouri. The federal government was not created to tell you that you have to have a label on your candy bar that says this contains peanuts. The federal government wasn't designed to tell you that you can't buy a CD that isn't labeled in a certain way. The federal government wasn't designed to tell you what you can and cannot see on TV. Now, to a progressive, to a liberal, it sounds like you're talking crazy talk when you say that. It sounds like, you know, I hear a lot of things from my progressive and liberal friends about, oh, yeah, you're just an each man for himself kind of thing. You're just every man for himself, yeah, and to hell with everybody else, yeah, and the Wild Wild West and the biggest gun rules the town. No, that's not the way it is at all. Don't think for a minute, brothers and sisters, that once we regain state sovereignty and once we do away with the FDA and the FCC and the FBI and the FLMNOPQRS and the EPA. Don't think for a second that Jefferson City and your brothers and sisters in the state of Missouri aren't going to tell you you can't dump toxins in Lake of the Ozarks. Of course they are. You know, they're not going to come along from Jefferson City. And you and me and the people who run the state of Missouri, that's us. We're not going to let somebody build a big factory on the banks of the James River or the Missouri River and start, you know, dumping dead bodies in there and selling us Soylent Green. That's not going to happen. But the idea is and should remain that those decisions are made at the state level. Now, we've got to back this all the way up to what liberty is all about. See, liberty is about this. Liberty is about nobody answers for my freedom but me. I am sovereign. You are sovereign. We are all sovereign unto ourselves. I don't care whether you believe that your liberty to make bad choices or to make good choices, your liberty to do right or wrong, your liberty to sin or not to sin, your liberty to cheat your neighbor or not cheat your neighbor is a liberty given you by God, or whether you believe that it is a liberty given you by the jungle. That is, a tiger in the jungle, he's at liberty to kill at will. So you may not believe in God. You may believe in evolution. You may believe that at one time we were one-celled animals swimming around in the muck and mire. That's fine. You're free to believe that. But in some fashion, or for whatever reason, you believe that we have liberty because we have risen to the top of the chain. Because if you don't believe in God and you believe in life by chance and by evolution, you believe that our liberty was bestowed on us by nature by virtue of the fact then that we are the gods. We are at the top of the chain, and so we are free to do whatever we want. Liberty is inherent in the human being. Whatever you source that liberty as, it is inherent in the human being. Your freedom to choose whatever you want to choose. Now, that freedom carries with it, in the social society, some responsibility. You know, you hear from your Christian friends, when they try to say this is a Christian nation, you hear them quote Thomas Jefferson even, and George Washington specifically and frequently, and Madison and Hamilton specifically and frequently, when they say things like, you know, this government is meant only for a moral people. This government is meant only for a Christian people, is what they'll translate that into. And that is not what was said nor what was intended. It was said, in fact, that this government is created only for a moral people, and it can only be sustained by a moral people. And what they are referring to there is that for us to keep freedom, for us to maintain an environment of liberty, we have got to recognize that everyone is responsible for the freedom they exercise. So, it is inherent on you to possess a morality, to live in a free society that says, I can't cheat my neighbor. I can't steal from the grocery store. I mean, back that up to the Ten Commandments if you want to, or back that up to the responsibility that is inherent to the exercise of liberty in a civil society. However you want to do it. So we get down to that. You are sovereign. You are free. You are given free will by God and nature to do as you please. God does not force you to follow the rules. But we have a problem there. We have a problem there, my Christian brother and sister, in that God's judgment for not doing so is a little bit displaced on the timeline, isn't it? I can kill 40 people or 50 people or 900 people before God puts an end to it and judges me. And so we need something a little bit more immediate in the way of making sure that society functions properly. And that's where we get the question, what is human government? Well, human government is this, and our forefathers decided was this best. Some person or group of people have to decide that although I am free to do as I please, society chooses not to let me sit in my front yard naked. Although I am really free to do as I please, although I am free to bear arms, it's probably not a good idea that I be able to put claymore mines in my front yard to keep the neighborhood kids out. Although I am totally free to do as I choose, it is probably not a good idea for me to be able to drive a Sherman tank down Main Street. It is probably not a good idea even for me to drive my Trans Am down Main Street at 140 miles an hour. It is probably not a good idea that I be allowed to exercise my freedom by playing Kid Rock in my backyard through 14 speakers at 3 o'clock in the morning. It probably is not a good idea, and we can go on and on. And the question becomes, who decides? Who decides? The person with the biggest gun? The person with the toughest gang? No. We decide. We decide. And we decide that at the state level. Why? Why at the state level? Because we can draw the smallest possible legislative districts. We can have a legislative district that is represented by a person who knows everyone in the district. I'm telling you right now, folks, if you are politically aware and you live in my district, your representative will know your name when he runs into you. My representative would recognize me if he saw me in the Hy-Vee supermarket. I would certainly recognize him too. These are people you can call and talk to on the phone. They're people you can Facebook with. They're people who you can read their tweets as they're thinking about what they're thinking about. There are people who respond to your questions, and they work in Jefferson City, Missouri. They work there, but they live here. They live down the street or around the block or over in the next neighborhood. They live the life you live. They shop the stores you shop. They drive the streets you drive. They know the people you know. They live with the everyday joys and heartaches of living where you live. Those are the people that should represent you in the decisions that affect your everyday life. That's the issue here. That's the only way you regain government, is through your state representative. Now, what's this million-dollar message all about? It's about this. We have a government in the state of Missouri that is a little bit lacking. We have a government in the state of Missouri that's a little bit short of a full deck, we could say. We have 5 empty legislative seats in the House of Representatives. 5. We have a quarter of a million people in the state of Missouri who have no representative in Washington, D.C. About 260,000 of them for a year, for an entire legislative session. The rest of the quarter million for anywhere between 1 and 3 months, or 3/4 of the legislative session. Those seats became empty. They were vacated by the people that held them for one reason or another, either reasons ranging from being appointed by the governor to a minor league seat in the Department of Corrections to actually passing away. We have a governor in this state who has a constitutional responsibility to see to it that you are represented. Hear me now. He has a constitutional responsibility to see to it that you are represented. He doesn't appoint you a representative. He issues a writ of election without delay. Now, that's the word of law. Without delay when a seat becomes vacant. And he calls for the people of that district to get themselves another representative, to duly elect a person to be their voice at the seat of power. Without that, you have no voice. Without that, you have no representation in the body that taxes you. You have no representation in the body that we've decided should be the one empowered to make the rules that affect your day-to-day life. And we have a governor who reneged on that responsibility. Intentionally, maliciously, and for political gain. Now, there is one state legislator who had the nerve to stand up and say, stop, this is not right. This, above all things, above all my personal grievances with this governor, above and beyond all my political grievances with this governor, this is a deal breaker. Intentionally and maliciously denying 260,000 sovereign Missourians any voice at the seat of the government is a deal breaker. We need to invite this man to find another job. And Nixon just laughed at him and said, yeah, do your best, buddy. And the powers in the House of Representatives said, fly on the wall. Made it clear from day one that they didn't want to hold the governor responsible for his constitutional duty. And Mike Moon moved on. And he filed articles of impeachment saying, at a minimum, let's bring the governor to a trial of facts in this case and let the court decide whether or not he should keep his job. It was never the duty of the House of Representatives, we all know, to fire the governor. It's not even within their power. All he said was, let's put a stop to this and find out in a trial of fact whether the governor has exceeded his constitutional authority by actively denying a 250,000 people representation in the government. And it took an immense act of patriotism from the grassroots people in Missouri to even get that assigned to a committee. And then a further active movement to even get that committee to hear the bill and the testimony. And then one day, the chairman of that committee decided single-handedly that we were going no further with these articles of impeachment. Further, in an effort to silence the dissent, the Republican Party in the state of Missouri has gone out and found a primary challenger for Mike Moon. They have said to this guy, you challenge the governor and we'll take you out. They have said to this guy, you stand up for the Constitution and we'll knock you down. They have said to you and to me, if you try to take your government back, we'll deal with you. They have said to every one of us, we own this thing, you don't own it, and it's time for us to talk back. We're waiting to hear from you at 347-677-1835. More on the million-dollar question when we get back in just 1 minute.
You see the lambs in the ghetto who worship their Geppetto, believing you never seen the strings they think bind them. So we write to our congressmen with bleeding pins of the sorrow within and pretend they just send tickets to the latest.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
You know, I was talking to a friend this afternoon, a little bit progressive, she is, and we were talking about this very thing, about the people taking back ownership of their government, and she said, you know, people are just too busy. I mean, they've got work. It takes two jobs in most households just to keep up. And they can't read the legislation. They can't know their legislator. They can't go to the meet and greets. And I say, yeah, it's true. It's a busy, busy world. But if that's your attitude, hang it up. We're done. If you aren't willing to stay up an extra 3 hours a night, or if you aren't willing to give up Dancing with the Stars or the ball game, if you aren't willing to do the hard, hard work, and it is, to keep abreast of who's representing you and what they're doing and what they're saying on your behalf at the seat of power, if you just don't have time for that, then hang it up. We're done. But if you do, this is where you start. This is where you start. We're asking for a million-dollar message. We're asking for a message that can't be missed, a message that says we are the people and we are taking over. This is a government for, of, and by the people, and that is us. You work for us. You govern at our consent. That's the only way this thing works. Remember, flashback to the first of the hour when I talked about someone having to decide that I can't sit in my front yard naked. You know, who decides that? If it's not going to be you and me, then we're lost. And it can only be you and me when we send a message to Jefferson City that we are the people and we decide who can sit in their front yard naked, not you. We decide what gets thrown in Lake of the Ozarks, not you. We decide through you what the rules are going to be that affect our daily lives. I decide. Vicky decides. Lucy decides. Terry decides. Lisa decides. We all decide together whether there's going to be any puppy mills in Missouri. And if there's not, at what level do we regulate that? We decide through you, not the other way around. Not you decide for us. We decide through you. We decide through you that this governor has stepped out of bounds. You accede to our demands. And only when the demands of the people in my district and the demands of the people in your district and the demands of the people in Mike Moon's district and the demands of the people in all these other districts are consistent, will there be anything happening that affects our lives. But right now, you have people from every district saying in huge numbers, the governor has stepped overboard. Not only that, but let me diverge for a second, okay? It sounds as though I've lost definition here. It sounds as though I'm advocating for a democracy, and to some extent I am advocating for a democratic republic, a representative democracy. But what is a constitutional republic? Well, see, there are some things, and this is what the state constitution is all about. There are some things that even the majority can't decide, aren't there? And we put those in a constitution. There are some things that even the governor and the legislators can't decide, regardless of how many people want them to. And we enshrine those in a constitution. So, I don't want to suggest that even if the majority of Missourians thought it was okay for a governor to leave a 250,000 people unrepresented, that it would be. Because it's not. I want to suggest that hold on, I'm multitasking here and I'm getting a little bit too old for that. Okay. The fact of the matter is that regardless of whether or not 60% of the people in the state of Missouri think it's okay for the governor to leave 250,000 people unrepresented, it's not. And one man single-handedly decided that it was. And when I say single-handedly, I mean that he had the power to stop this action without anyone else's consent, yours, mine, or the rest of the legislature's. And he did so. Now, we're asking 100,000 Missourians to send $10 to Mike Moon as he stands against a primary challenge mounted by the Missouri Republicans for his audacity to speak out. And we're asking for $10 to the campaign of Jeff Middlehauser in Sedalia, Missouri, as he stands against Can't remember the guy's name now. I got so carried away with my dissertation here. Who's the guy that, somebody help me out, who's the guy that is the head of the House Judiciary Committee? Stanley Cox. Stanley Cox is the head of the House Judiciary Committee. He's the one that stopped this bill. And I got carried away too much tonight, and I'm running out of time, and I'm sorry. But we'll be back, and we'll continue to deal with this issue. We're asking 100,000 Missourians to send $10 to Mike Moon. We'd like to hear from you that you pledge to do that at 347-677-1835. And we're asking the same 100,000 people to send $10 to Friends of Jeff Middlehauser in Sedalia. We'll be giving that address out here in a bit. Stanley Cox, the guy who single-handedly killed the article of impeachment against the governor for denying 250,000 Missourians representation in Washington, D.C., is running for a circuit judgeship, if you can imagine that, in Pettis County. He is opposing, he's coming in with all the power of party in opposition to a longtime Pettis County prosecutor, Jeff Middlehauser. This is not about Mike Moon. I like Mike Moon. I'm giving Mike Moon money myself. I'm working hard for Mike Moon. I'll have Mike Moon on the show and we'll all talk to him. I'm going to go to some of Mike Moon's events, but this isn't about Mike Moon. It's not about Jeff Middlehauser. This is about standing up, Republicans, to your party gone absolutely out of control. It's about standing up, libertarians and Constitution Party people, to the power of the elite in Jefferson City and saying, we are the people and we are taking our government back. It is about standing up to those who are sending you a message that they're in control and you are not, who are telling you day in and day out that you work for the government. It doesn't work for you. This is about standing up and saying we, the people, are forming a more perfect union. We, the people, do not consent. We, the people, fire you. I'm not going to try to hide my disappointment with the response that we've gotten. I mean, I see you folks are out there listening. I don't know what's going through your mind that we're not somehow doing this. I don't know what's going through your mind. I can only tell you that if you're too busy, if you're listening to me, but you say, well, I just don't know that what he's saying up there is absolutely true. It's probably just a bunch of propaganda. If I get the time, I'll go and research this and see if all of that's really, really the way it's going up there. But for now, I'm getting this newsletter from my legislator, and it doesn't look like, you know, if you're too busy, if you just don't care, then throw it in. We're lost. You know, these people are going to keep telling you that they're in charge and you're not. You know, they're going to keep telling you that you work for them. They don't work for you. Does it bother you a bit that the keynote piece of legislation from an entire 5 months of work is a penny on is a dime on $100 tax cut? No, I was right the first time. No, it's a dime. A dime. A dime on $100. Starting in 2017. That's the high note of the legislative session. That's the high note of a legislative session where we are begging for a convention to fix the Constitution of the United States to put the federal government back in its box. That is the keynote piece of legislation for a session where we are begging the state of Missouri to protect our Second Amendment rights. That is the keynote piece of legislation in a year where we see the federal government putting its heavy boot right in the middle of our education system once again. That is the keynote piece of legislation when we are begging them to protect us from Agenda 21. That is the keynote piece of legislation in a state that has denied 250,000 people any voice at the seat of power. Does that bother you at all? Do you even want a voice? Do you even want the responsibility, the heavy, heavy responsibility, the burden of owning your own government? I mean, it's fun, I guess, to turn on the blog talk every Friday and Saturday night and listen to some crazy lunatic rail on for 2 hours about bullshit that you don't even care about. But come on, folks. This is your life. This is your government. People died for this. Does that matter? 347-677-1835. We're going to come back, and then for about 10 minutes, you're going to hear my Memorial Day speech that I give every year about this time. And then we're going to call it a night. This is the altar call, folks, 347-677-1835.
Come the archer. Come the infantry, come the archers of hell. This is why we fight, why we die away. This is why.
They told me that you had gone totally insane, and that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I didn't see any methods.
Okay, we're back. Listen, folks, this is Memorial Day weekend, and Monday is Memorial Day. I want you all to take some time and just spend as much or as little time as you want to, but sometime on Monday, remembering what it's all about. Memorial Day, in case you have forgotten or never knew, is a day when we honor those who gave their very lives fighting for this country. It's not a day to remember veterans past, present, and future. Those serving now, they have a day. Veterans Day comes along later in the year. And it's become a day when we just kind of go out and put flowers on our mom and dad, grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle's grave. It's not even a day for that. It's not a day. I do not mean to denigrate your feelings about your past ancestors. I have strong feelings about my past ancestors. But that's not what Memorial Day is about. Pick another day, their birthday, or some day that you just choose to remember them. Save Memorial Day for what it's all about. And it's about the fact that millions of men and women have paid the ultimate price for the freedom that we sit here and talk about on Friday and Saturday nights. Millions of people have paid with their lives for the freedom and liberty that we enjoy in this country. If you own or are responsible for a flag, try to remember the flag etiquette for Memorial Day. The sun rises on the flag at half staff. Whether you raise a flag in the morning or not, If you fly a flag all night long, then at sunrise it should be lowered to half staff in honor of those millions who have died for this country. Then at noon, the flag is raised back to the top because the United States of America, after all these years, stands full and proud and ready to move forward because of that sacrifice. So the sun rises on a half-staff flag, and the flag goes up at noon. And take a moment to remember those people for whom your liberty was sufficient enough for them to give their very lives. God bless you and keep you until next Thursday night when we'll do this again. 347-677-1835. I'm Dave, and we'll talk to you next time.
There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in?